As if the McCrispy couldn't get any better, Bacon and Ranch just entered the chat. The Bacon Ranch McCrispy. Available at participating McDonald's for a limited time. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Welcome back to the Celtics Lab Podcast. I'm your host, Cameron Tepdabai, joined as always by Alex Goldberg and Dr. Justin Quinn. This week, we are joined by Sports Illustrated's Rohan Nadkarni to discuss what might be in store for the Celtics moving forward. Rohan, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you guys so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, the pleasure's all ours, certainly. Justin, Alex, how are we?
Can't complain. Just coming off a couple of successful shows, one of which you graced us with your presence at, Cam. Thanks for being there. Wrapping up the semester. Got about 3 days left before winter break. I'm feeling good.
Sorting through the detritus of what's a trade rumor, what's some speculation, and all that fun stuff with this week being upon us has been interesting. It will help me earn a living, so I can't complain too much, but sometimes it's just not very fun.
Cool. I'm pretty distracted by the Succession season finale, so I haven't really thought about what lies ahead for the NBA season, but Rohan, that's kind of why you're here, I guess. In fact, you're going to help us decide if big moves are on the horizon for the Celtics, but first we're going to jump into the news. And of course, that means talking about last night's big win over Milwaukee. The Celtics, after a 1-5 West Coast swing, hosted the Bucks in Boston. And Alex, give us a recap.
Great game from start to finish. It was really compelling. The Celtics were down after the first quarter, but with Jaylen Brown back on the court, and of course he took a scary collision where he bumped his knee with Bobby Portis. But with Jaylen Brown back on the court, you could tell that this team had a different kind of swagger about them. The ball was really moving a lot better around the perimeter. People were kind of getting a little bit more aggressive, taking the ball to the basket. I guess probably had something to do with Brook Lopez being out as well. But, additionally, I think the offense looked a lot better and the defense looked unafraid of Giannis throughout the entire night, which I thought was really impressive. You know, at one point, Grant Williams got a little chippy with Bobby Portis, which I think the team actually fed off of in a positive way. It was just overall a wire-to-wire really good win. And, you know, you have to talk about the kind of main event, which is Jason Tatum having a spectacular game. I think he had 42-7-4, just an all-around dominant performance against one of the best defensive teams in the league and against one of the best and maybe the best player in the league in Giannis. It was a really great win, and it's one of those wins where you see the potential of this team when everybody is on the floor and when everybody is kind of on the same page. Tatum and Brown are just such a compelling duo when they're at their best. And last night was a perfect example of it. With the Celtics team, it's always up and down. You never really know what you're going to get on a night-to-night basis. But it's clear that, you know, their ceiling, when they are all rolling, when everything is going right, this team is a real force. It's just about trying to piece that together on a more consistent basis.
Yeah, it's that inconsistent basis that has me very skeptical. I do think that there's some good takeaways from this game, but I need to see more.
Yeah, Rohan, you have unbiased eyes, I suspect. You think Alex is right with his optimism, or should we reflect on the fact that Chris Middleton missed half the game?
No, I think that there are definitely reasons to be optimistic. To be honest, I expected to see more of this version of the Celtics. Obviously, inconsistency has been an issue, but at the same time, you're looking at a team that's got a new coach. They're working in some guys, whether it's Schroeder or Josh Richardson or Al Horford to an extent, even Rob Williams to an extent, guys who are playing bigger roles or weren't on the team last year. All of that with the new head coach, I think it's normal for it to take time. And I know it's so easy to get caught up in kind of how the season has started and kind of draw conclusions. Obviously, that's our job. That's what we're supposed to do. At the same time, we had a team last year, like, let's say the Hawks. I don't think at this point in the season, anyone expected the Hawks to make a conference final. So
right.
I do think there are reasons to be optimistic for the Celtics. I think last night showed what they can be when they're at full strength and clicking on all cylinders. I think they're as, you know, I think the Bucks and Nets are probably in their own tier, but I think after those two teams, the Celtics at their best can be as good as anybody in the East.
I'm so happy we invited you on. and it's worth pointing out the Celtics are 2-1 now against the Bucks and Nets of the season. So going into the Bucks game, probably no one was feeling as optimistic about the Celtics, although we knew that potential was there, anchored by a really ugly trip out west. Justin, you want to not just recap the games? I mean, I think people know what happened, but the mood and kind of the storylines that dominated?
Well, I'm sure you guys have seen all the "we need to split up Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum" articles, and "we need to move Marcus Smart," and "we need to do this," and "we need to fire Ime Udoka," and we can talk about all of those ideas later. But the vibes were fucked, pardon my French. But that's what they were. It was a really bad scene. To Rowan's point, I think that a lot of it was overreaction, and I've done a fair amount of trying to tamp down, like, yes, big moves do need to happen for this team to be a title contender. Do they need to happen now? I'm not sure. Do we need to trade one of the team's best players for someone to shake things up? I doubt it. Maybe at some point, but let's just get through the trade deadline first and see where we're at and see what they do and see how they play, because there is a much easier schedule coming up for Boston. And like we said ahead of this really, really hard patch of games that we're currently starting on, like almost through, really, it's going to be hard and the record's going to be bad. But the way they were losing in some of those games were particularly disappointing.
Yeah, so I have that begs an interesting question that wasn't really kind of on our radar. So Rohan and anyone who's unaware, Alex and I are high school teachers by trade. So we'll kind of take a back seat here, but you and Justin are in the biz, and it occurs to me that storylines, and we don't need to name names here, but storylines like "we need to break up the Jays" or "rival executives expect Boston to look to trade Jaylen Brown" feel as much about a product of how long the NBA regular season is as it is a product of actual intel or immediacy on the court. So Ron, and you can kind of duck this question, again, no need to name names, but like, how much of the rumor mill do you think is as much feeding the need for content, and where does the kind of like the Celtics storyline fit in that, if that makes sense?
No, I think that there's definitely something to that, right? Someone is putting in that ask with the rival executive to kind of get their opinion. And I will say that I do think it's coming from somewhere.
Sure.
You know, I it's tough. I mean, I honestly don't dig too deep into trade rumor stories and all that stuff, because frankly, like, just tell me when the trade happens, right? At the end of the day, you know, I'll know if a trade happens when I see so-and-so playing for a different team. The rumors interest me generally a little bit less. So it's not even something that I personally, as someone who, even though it's part of my job, it's something that I'm not necessarily looking into too deeply all the time, because it doesn't really matter unless that person gets traded. In terms of the Jaylen Brown stuff, that was always shocking to me. I mean, I know people who think there's no way they would ever get rid of him. I mean, he's such a success story considering, you know, when they picked him, I don't think anybody expected him to be an all-star level player. There were a lot of questions as to why they did it, if that was a good pick, etc. He's kind of a feather in the cap for the organization, obviously the same for Tatum. So to me, it should be all about how do we build around these two guys that frankly any team in the league would want. So the Brown rumors, just in terms of team building, like if you're building a great team in the modern NBA, the idea that you don't want two great perimeter players, both of whom can score, both of whom can defend, that just doesn't check out to me. Now, right. Unless there is some kind of chemistry thing or personality thing that we are not attuned to or has not been reported, that could affect it. But I've certainly never gotten the impression that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown don't like playing with each other. So I do think there's an element of, you know, people are kind of asking around and maybe trying to find an answer that's interesting. At the same time, I I think that there's probably some kind of mild truth to what's going on there. I mean, maybe it's just straight up frustration or disappointment that things haven't clicked as quickly as they hoped. But I guess ultimately, if we're getting to the heart of it, I'd be really surprised if the Celtics broke those two players up anytime soon, unless it was something kind of massive or unforeseen that we haven't really considered yet.
Rohan, I wonder how much of it too is also the kind of gamesmanship of NBA front offices. It seems to me that all of these front offices feature a bunch of guys who know each other, who have known each other for a long time, and who have, in the way that NBA players have, a competitive relationship where they might be friendly with each other, you know, off the court, but as soon as they're on the court going against each other, it's kind of a like real serious level of competition. I kind of wonder how much of these like trade everybody stories are also things that NBA front office execs kind of drop here and there just as a way to like needle another team or to just kind of poke at them. And it sounds a little silly, but the thing is, so many people involved in this industry are wired in that same kind of competitive mindset. You know, I think about a guy like Daryl Morey, who really carries himself in a lot of ways like an NBA player. He definitely has a kind of aggressive competitive mindset when it comes to trading and to building his roster. And I feel like there might be a little element of that too. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I definitely think there is an element of gamesmanship that can occur. I mean, there are just so many also people attached to a front office that may speak to a story, whether it's an assistant GM and they have a relationship with someone in the front office from, you know, there's definitely an element of that. And I do think that there are some GMs that maybe draw more ire or attention or scrutiny from other GMs around the league. Obviously, you mentioned Daryl Morey. I think he's someone who is so front-facing that people have opinions of him, and those opinions obviously range. The same obviously could be said about Sam Hinkie. I don't think that some people are just lightning rods. That's how it goes. So I do think that there's, like everything that is being reported, there is often an agenda. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're putting trust in, I mean, that's why we have trust in certain reporters who are reporting certain things, because we're kind of counting on them to filter, you know, what's just the agenda here and what's actually valuable information. So I would definitely say that there's an element of rivalry and gamesmanship that trickles down into everything we do. But, you know, ultimately for this trade stuff, I will say that it's so hard to also classify what's a rumor or what's, you know, the level to which something rises, a trade talk, there's no definition for what a trade talk is, right? If a team calls the Celtics and says, would you guys ever trade Jaylen Brown? Does that mean they engage in trade talks? I mean, who knows? It's
technically
right. So it could mean a lot of different things. And I think it's fair to say that there's probably some gamesmanship going around, but that's when you just kind of have to take everything on a case by case basis. Who's reporting this? What kind of stuff do they typically report, et cetera?
I definitely agree. I think that there is also the fact that we have a very new general manager or president of basketball operations in Brad Stevens. And, you know, one of the tools that's available to general managers of teams is the press. And if we were naive enough to really believe that they wouldn't be trying to use that to their advantage, I think that that would be silly. So I do think that there is some amount of gamesmanship involved. I don't know how much it actually affects things, though. Maybe it does get under the player's skin, and maybe there's a hope that that kind of also helps grease the wheels for some kind of change.
Well, it's funny. I posed the question, but intellectually, I know, Rohan, to your point, I can see the Jaylen report or the idea that Jaylen would go to Memphis and think, nope, not worth my time. But then I see an aggregated report that maybe the Lakers would trade Westbrook, and it's like, oh yeah, they would do that. That's fine. So let's assume moving forward that these are good faith arguments, that these rumors have some merit to them, and that will kind of anchor our thinking moving forward as we digest the kind of options for the Seas for the rest of the season. I'm just going to breeze through the rest of the news really, really quick, and if anyone wants to chime in, obviously feel free. So we should lead with COVID seems to be dominating NBA circles. Something that we've said before on this podcast is that NBA players get tested more often than the average public, so they probably present positive more often. But that's because still 40-something percent of COVID cases are asymptomatic. So this is our plea to continue to be safe and smart, because we're so far from out of the woods and the NBA is, no pun intended, proof positive there. On the other side of the emotional spectrum, Isaiah Thomas signing with the G League, with the Denver Nuggets affiliate, joining Lance Stephenson. So that's amazing. And he will be part of the G League showcase. Bill Russell raised $5.1 million with his mentor, BC United. Charity auction, right, Justin?
Yeah, actually, yeah. That's Boston Celtics United. That's the big social justice thing that they put together during the bubble, actually. So that's pretty cool.
I would hate for Boston College to get free press there. Thanks. And Brad was overseas scoping out Jan Madar, which is could be exciting. I remember a time not too long ago where we thought he might be part of the Celtics rotation. Anything, anyone want to react to that, or should we hop into the Celtics lab?
I will say about the Madar business, there's no roster spot for him now, but let's just say you cut a player with a partial guarantee. I won't say who. We can talk about that in a little bit. You might have an open spot. And let's just say you deal away a point guard. I won't say who. You might need a point guard. Just saying.
I wish I had thought of that. Okay. Anyways, Rohan, you're here not to talk about Jan Madar, but instead to talk about what might happen to this Boston Celtics team. So we are going to hop into our Celtics lab portion of the programming. And before we kind of lay out the options we have, as you see it, Rohan, and I'll ask Alex and Justin as well, what is the biggest problem facing the Celtics team?
Everything is baked into the context in that the last 5 or 6 years or so, Boston, I think, really set themselves up to be in a great position to succeed. And it's not quite the same as the Sixers, but in many ways, both those teams had positioned themselves really well. And sometimes you just get unlucky. I mean, they obviously got really unlucky starting with the Gordon Hayward injury. They got unlucky with Kyrie wanting out, because that was frankly a smart trade to make, even though as callous as it seemed at the time, a smart trade to make. They got unlucky. He wanted out. They probably should have made the Gordon Hayward for Miles Turner trade if that really existed. It always shocked me that they didn't, frankly, for a lot of reasons that we don't have to get into, because, again, we don't know how real that was. But even if it's just to not let him go for anything, but then they lose him for nothing. They lost Al Horford for nothing at the time. Obviously, they were able to bring him back. But they just, you know, they've had some bad fortune when they've positioned themselves well. And to me, I think their biggest problem is I think they just need to find that one other, you know, blue chipper, close to all-star level player that amplifies what they're doing. I know you guys mentioned my podcast host, Michael Pina, who I work with at Sports Illustrated. I told him before the season, and we've had discussions about this on our podcast, not on our podcast. It surprises me that this team isn't pushing its chips more towards the center of the table, only because they have two players who are so talented in Brown and Tatum. So I guess my big picture thoughts are this is a team that should be contending for titles. They're fortunate that their two best players are obviously still very young. But if I'm them, I'm looking to amplify what we have, because I have two players who I think could very easily be the cornerstones of a great team.
Rohan, you know, I think that's a really interesting point, but I do have to say, I think in some respects you're giving the Celtics, yeah, obviously they were unlucky and they had some bad breaks literally go their way or not go their way, but there are a couple of moves and choices that the Celtics made over the past kind of few years that I think have ultimately compiled into something of a challenge for the Brad Stevens front office.
Let me just add in, I guess I should have mentioned, it would have helped if they'd hit on one of these picks, right? You look at the an organization like the Heat, for example, or even the Grizzlies, like when they picked Desmond Bane, like no one was talking about Desmond Bane, or
it just sort of hurts.
I knew Desmond Bane was going to come up, and
I didn't even know. Did the Celtics pass on him? I didn't even.
Oh, they passed
we
on
drafted him.
Him. They passed on him twice.
Was not even aware. But even the Heat, they get undrafted guys like Stroops or Caleb Martin or Gabe Vincent, and the Celtics, I think, have strong. I mean, I think part of the issue, my colleague Chris Mannix has been pounding the table for this. They need to probably play the young guys a bit more, but I think a huge issue for them is not one of Pritchard, Langford, or Nesmith has kind of popped. I mean, Rob Williams has turned out to be a fantastic pick, and they just need more of that. They need more of the Rob Williams picks, which they had set themselves up to do, but they just didn't hit.
Yeah. And I think those issues are related to kind of why it's been so challenging for the Celtics to acquire that third star, particularly after, you know, Hayward left for nothing, Kyrie left for nothing, Horford left for nothing, and you had to actually pay a little premium to get him back. A big part of this is that when those young guys don't hit, when they don't become blue chip prospects, it becomes really hard to build appealing trade packages for star players. Now, you know, we'll see. Obviously, Rob Williams did hit. He's become a pretty critical piece for this team to the point where he might actually not be somebody that Celtics can really afford to trade. Similarly, Grant Williams is developing. He's coming along nicely. That might be another area to look there. But I think those two problems are kind of related, where the Celtics draft misses are starting to catch up with them, not just in terms of like who they have in their rotation and who they're able to play, but also in terms of the kind of capital that they're able to throw around in terms of acquiring a star player via trade.
I don't disagree. And I think you actually kind of summed up something that I probably annoyed Cam a lot with over the last year or so, basically just complaining about how Danny Ainge has always been behind the eight ball because he keeps being overly conservative, hoping that the luck is going to break his way. And all of those, like my biggest thing is, once you have the talent on the roster, you don't let it off the roster unless you have a way to secure, like an extension, for example. And I think that part of what has happened is just been this big pileup of not doing these things, having a cascading effect that have brought us to this point. Which brings me to what is going on with Ime Udoka. Why is he not playing these players more? And what is it going to mean for the future, Cam?
Yeah, and I've said this before, is my answer to this question is I think that the roster is a little too dynamic and there needs to be a little consolidation, because I don't know what players' roles are. I'm sure they don't know really what their roles are. A lot of the feedback after the Bucks game was that Udoka sat them down and had this intense film session, and that seemed to be really helpful. I think it would be helpful if the rotation was closer to 8 or 9 guys, as opposed to trying to showcase your entire bench either for trades or to see what fits. So I've said this before, I'm looking for an addition by subtraction kind of move to shore things up on the back end. But that would be a good segue, but I want to do a little brass tacks, no pun intended. So Justin, can you just, we'll get more into this with the Schroeder stuff, but just give us an overview of the tax situation for the Celtics, because I do think we can daydream about small moves and big moves, but it's important to be grounded in kind of what is possible.
Yeah, so they have basically a decision tree on whether or not they think that this team is worth being a tax-paying team. If you listen to the newest Open Floor podcast, they have a discussion on this as well with Rohan and Michael Pina. And it's very true across the league. There are a lot of teams that think they might be able to go pretty deep, if not all the way this season. Things are as shaky as they've, you know, been for the title picture in quite a while. I mean, even with the bubble, it seemed a little bit more likely that we were going to have some of the teams in the end of the playoffs where they were. But now we have a bunch of teams that are either going to be looking to sell or buy and try to sneak under the tax if they can. there is a scenario where the Celtics might not sneak under the tax, even if they don't think they're going to be a real contender or close to a contender. They might just try to go ahead and find a way to get some talent on, and that might be worth paying the tax to keep the Jays happy longer term. But no matter what, they have a little bit more than $6 million they need to get under, and they have some tools to do that, which we can talk more about later. But ultimately, it's just coming down to a decision on exactly what path you want to take with this team, like get really bad and get some assets to get talent, trade for some talent, or go for it.
All right, awesome. Thanks for that. That again, I think it's fun to think up mock trades or what might be down the pipe, but a lot of it has to do with financials, which is heady and not that fun. So let's make this a little more navel-gazy. So Rohan, what I'm going to do is let me tell you what the five options for how this Celtics season shakes out, how the team might approach dealing with any sort of woes they might be facing. And then I'll ask you, hey, what do you think? Good idea, bad idea, pitfalls, opportunities. And then we'll breeze through these. We might spend a few minutes on one or a lot of minutes on many. So option one, they can stand pat. They can trust the system that they have. They can figure out the rotation internally. Option two is going to be that they make some moves around the margins, consolidate talent, kind of what I was talking about. Option three, and I guess we're just like turning up the heat as we go. They could use the TPE that they have, the $17 million one, use vets to get assets and play for the future. Another one is that they make a major move other than the Jays, either blow it up in a win now move or blow it up with a win later move. And then finally, option five is really blow it up. Maybe Udoka's gone. Maybe Stevens is gone. Maybe Jaylen Brown is gone. So the nuclear option would be option five. So let's start mild and get extra spicy. Rohan, what does standing pat look like for the Celtics?
I think a case can be made for standing pat because you look through, this is a very crude way to do it, but I mean, you look through their lineup stats. I mean, the most basic one, right? Tatum and Brown. I think they had a 7 point something net rating on the floor together in just two man lineups. They have a five man starting lineup that's played outstanding together, which I believe is Smart, Brown, Tatum, Horford, and Williams has been great when they're on the floor. Schroeder, I think, was finding himself once Brown went out on that West Coast trip. I think even though the team struggled, he had some nice moments. I think standing pat looks like we have at least eight players who can survive on the floor in a playoff series right now between the starting five plus Richardson, Williams, and Schroeder. And can we find one more on the team? Either they grow because we kind of throw them in the fire in the playoffs, or until then, they can find their footing. But I think standing pat, I look at it like, okay, the Bulls have been great, and I love the Bulls. They are not tested as a group together in the playoffs. The Celtics team, for all the concern, a playoff-tested group. Brown and Tatum have been multiple conference finals. Same for Al Horford. Marcus Smart, a group that's been through the fire together. And that's, to me, is going to be valuable. You look elsewhere in the East, the Heat started off really hot, and now they have their own injury issues. Cleveland, same thing, young team. They're not playoff tested together as a group. So I think standing pat for Boston, could they get to the second round? Sure. Could they get to the conference finals? It would be tough. We saw them at the same time. I don't know that there is a huge difference between Boston at their best and kind of the second tier in the East. And they've shown in the past they can have success against the Bucks. They can have success against the Sixers. So to me, I don't think standing pat is a crazy option, if only because you don't want to do something irrational or something with kind of unintended consequences. I know that Schroeder's name has popped up. If they do try to duck under the tax, he gets them really close. I understand it's tricky because we just talked about they can't keep losing players for nothing. But to me, he's someone who could be really valuable for them in a playoff series. So if the options are, I know we have four others, but if it was stand pat or get rid of someone like Schroeder to duck the tax, I'd rather they stand pat.
And to that end, you know, it is worth noting that the Celtics' record against the top of the Eastern Conference is actually quite good. There's really only one team at the top of the East that has given the Celtics serious trouble this year, and that's Brooklyn, who has Kevin Durant, who has given the Celtics serious trouble for a decade. And there's not much that they can do about that, and I don't think any moves that they make in the near future are going to change that. Sorry, Celtics fans, Kevin Durant is very, very good. But, you know, I mean, if you look at their record against Philly, they've beaten them once. They're going to play them again soon. But there's the record against the Bucks. They're 2-0 against the Bucks this year. They've split a series with Cleveland. They haven't beaten the Hawks yet. They haven't beaten the Bulls yet. But, you know, based on the way that both of those games went, the Celtics had a chance to beat both of those teams and just kind of blew it. The same can be said for the Wizards. You know, I think the Celtics, in terms of how they've actually fared in head-to-head matchups against some of the East's best teams, they've really done quite well. The issue is that they have choked away some winnable games, and they have also really struggled against the Western Conference.
They also did it during a period of time where they were really changing the identity, or even really finding an identity of the team. They made some fairly significant changes, had a new coach, as we've said before, and had to really take on a defensive identity that really is dependent on a level of play that young players don't normally, they're not necessarily always good at, because it requires a level of dedication and focus that is typically more than they've been asked to do to that point, particularly when they've been surrounded by competent veterans and stars up to that point. So I do see some value in that. If I were a better prepared podcaster, I would be able to tell you about the future concerns about standing pat and the tax and all that good stuff. But because, you know, Mike Zarin is a genius, and I believe in Brad Stevens' ability to get us out of messes, as he already did a fairly decent job with the Kemba Walker. I love you, Kemba, but still, it was a mess of a situation. I think we can, you know, kick that can down the road for some future podcast.
Sure. So we admittedly planned this when our moods were a little more sour. And so this does go from not so bad to, again, kind of a nuclear option. I suppose we can also go on the flip side of the coin, and some of these are opportunities, not just desperate attempts at changing things from an opportunity to get better, but as actually like go and compete or whatnot. So anyways, option two, moves around the margin, consolidate talent. Again, is that a shuffling of the deck that is necessary, or a shuffling of deck that is an opportunity? Rohan, what is kind of just changing things up in the back end of the rotation look like for the Celtics?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. It just kind of depends who's out there, you know? Are you shuffling the deck just to get like a Thad Young in, or you know, what's the role they want to fill or need to fill right now? I actually, again, the lineup data hasn't necessarily borne this out yet, but I do think this is a team that in a playoff context has flexibility, right? You can play just one of Horford or Williams and surround them with kind of perimeter guys, or you can kind of go more defense first with Jay Rich, or more offense first with Schroeder. So I do think they have options. I'm less into just consolidating. I'd have to know the names of who they would be consolidating that talent for before I'm saying, yeah, just make a move, because sure, they could probably use maybe a more table setting point guard, right? Maybe a more natural playmaker at that position. At the same time, those guys aren't typically just available at the trade deadline. That's easier said than done. So to me, I'm more they should stand pat, not to step on some of the future options that we're going to discuss. But to me, for them, it's either stand pat or make a move that doesn't involve Jalen or Jason. And to go back to what we said earlier, that's really another place where missing on these picks hurts them, right? Because if you could package Marcus Smart, I'm not saying that this is something that they've talked about, but in theory, let's say Damian Lillard did become available, right? Mm-hmm. And you could package Smart, Rob Williams, and one or two of these guys that you drafted that are blue chip prospects that teams are interested in, Now you're also in the market to trade for a star to put around your two stars, because teams around the league covet a Langford or a Nesmith. But that's another place where the drafting has really hurt them, where they're also a little bit hamstrung if they do want to make a move and try to go get a star, because I don't know that they have a lot of pieces that teams would be interested in outside of Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, I would think that if it was going to be that Godfather four picks and young talent offer, that a player would kind of tell their own team they want to go to Boston, because it does, to your point, seem like right now a lot of other teams could beat Boston's Godfather offer.
Yeah, I'm not even certain that some of these draft picks are necessarily bad choices. I think that we just haven't seen them developed at all. They haven't gotten the playing time. And to do what needs to be done with this team in the short term, maybe the plan is to use those veterans in such a way that they will then become more valuable and get assets, and then you develop those for a longer view thing. Maybe the second half of the season is going to be these younger players finally getting some run, combined with some not so great, but you know, some assets that then can be hopefully packaged for something further down the line, which is not very exciting to think we have a multi-year, really a rebuild going on here rather than a natural progression. But I suspect that there's a pretty good chance that that's what we're looking at.
So to that end, that's kind of what option three looks like, right? Is that maybe you can flip Richardson or Schroeder to get back a young player, take a flyer on someone, or even a draft pick. And then you're building up Langford or Nesmith either as rotational pieces or as future trade chips for, I don't know, Carl Anthony Towns or some big buck. So Rohan, for option three, what would it mean for the Celtics if in another month and a half they're at 500 and they do begin to punt on the season? What do you think that would mean for Udoka? What would that mean for Stevens? What would that mean for the Jays?
If they do, for some reason, really decide we're not going to give this season kind of a true championship run or effort, which I can understand that happening, I don't think anyone's jobs are going to be at stake. I mean, this is the first kind of go around for both Stevens and Udoka at this. I think it would be kind of crazy to make a move there. I mean, Udoka is someone who's been talked about as a head coaching candidate for so long. I don't think you just want to give up on him after one season. I think that in that scenario, I think all that really happens is, do they try to dump either Juancho, you mentioned Richardson, who's got 1 year on his deal after this one. Do they maybe try to move those guys and get a pick back, which to me would be mostly about ducking under the tax? So I think that kind of becomes their priority if in 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever, close to the trade deadline, they're still kind of hovering around 500, they don't get any consistency, et cetera. Because they also have a level of financial flexibility in the future that I think it's important for them not to jeopardize. Not that I think that, you know, this upcoming summer is going to be a big free agency one, or they're all of a sudden going to be in the sweepstakes for some big star, but I think it's important to at least maintain that flexibility and not kind of ruin it over a short-sighted move. So I think in the event that they kind of aren't able to go on any sort of run here or don't get a prolonged period of health with both Jason and Jaylen. I mean, Jaylen, from the moment the season started, it's been really unfortunate, you know, whether he was dealing with coming back from COVID, then the hamstring issues. So I think that, to me, if for some reason they decide not to do anything and aren't that interested in making a big push this season, outside of ducking under the tax, I don't think they do anything irrational.
Yeah, and to that end, I think, unfortunately, so the Celtics have a couple more tough games up ahead, and then the load lightens up. But unless they break free and become the runaway 3 or 4 seed in the East, for example, I don't know that they're going to put their chips in. And again, if they're just in the middle of the pack, it might be the case that they kind of strip for assets. So I think that that's probably spot on. Unfortunately, that's probably their most boring option, quite frankly. Okay, so let's say either the team isn't playing well, or other teams are playing better, or there is bad chemistry situation, what would trading Marcus Smart and Rob Williams look like? Do you think, Rohan, that that's an opportunity or an admission of some sort of defeat?
Rob Williams is interesting. I know lots of Celtics fans are high on him. I think he's great. Sometimes I watch him and he plays with an aggression that I think more bigs in the league should play with. That second Lakers game they ended up losing, but all those alley-oops he was catching, all those lobs that he was dunking in over Anthony Davis. He just has such a great bounce, great defensive instincts. And he's already signed long-term. I mean, one thing the question we kind of had about him going into the season is, can he maintain his level of play with his role increased, with his minutes increased? I think he's thrived. He's part of the starting unit that's played great. So I think you could get back something really interesting if you could put together a package that's Rob Williams, Marcus Smart, a couple first-round picks. I do think that that is an opportunity and their best chance at improving. It's just a question of, does the right star kind of shake free? And do they want to play with Jason and Jalen that you're kind of willing to do it? If Bradley Beal comes out straight up and says, I want to play in Boston, I mean, I don't know if that's enough, but it could be good. I mean, they'd probably still need to add more pick swaps, whatever. I mean, it's crazy to kind of get into those things, but I do think that it's not some kind of admission of something's not working. If the right player shakes free, then I think, everything is on the table when it comes to guys like Smart and Williams, who I think are good and useful players who would be great on many teams that want to win. So it's not looking – if you want to – at the end of the day, if you want to get a good player back, you have to send some good players out, right? And that's what it comes down to with Smart and Williams.
So I'm going to pause there because Alex, you can represent the emotional side of the Celtics fan base because I know you love Rob Williams and Smart. If Rohan is right, and I suspect very much so that he is, what kind of player, do you have a name in mind that it would take for you to feel emotionally comfortable with trading Smart and Rob Williams in a package?
I mean, what's hard about this is not just the emotional impact. Obviously, I love Rob and Marcus, and I would hate to see either of them go out in a trade. But what's tough for me about this is not just the emotional impact. It's also the simple question of, does trading both of those guys for the available star talent that is maybe out there make this team better? Now, in the case of like a Damian Lillard, you probably have to do that, right? Because Damian Lillard is an established true superstar. I know you don't like that, Cam, but Damian Lillard, if you can get a true third superstar to play with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, you probably have to at least kick the tires on that. In terms of like Karl Anthony Towns, that would be the name for me that would really be challenging to turn that down. I don't think that Towns is particularly available. And I kind of feel like even if he were available, I'm not sure the Celtics would have the best package to get him. I think trading Jaylen Brown is, I have a long Twitter thread about this, but trading Jaylen Brown is off the table. I just think that's a historically stupid idea unless you're getting back a bona fide like top 12 guy. But if you're trading Marcus and Rob, it would probably have to be somebody who is around Karl Anthony Towns quality of player. And it would also have to be somebody who fits with the roster. I don't like the idea of trading Marcus and Rob for a Bradley Beal or a Zach LaVine, to throw some names out who are going to be hitting free agency soon, in part because LaVine and Beal play Jaylen Brown's position. And I think both of them, you have questions about defense, you have questions about kind of how they would look as a third option, which they most likely would be in this situation. And, the Celtics have struggled. Obviously, they were, better with Kyrie Irving and better with a healthy Kemba Walker. But at times they struggled with, kind of getting everybody the touches that they needed to really maximize their effectiveness. The player that this player doesn't really exist, but I would be looking for somebody who can fill the kind of Gordon Hayward role of like a wing playmaker shooter who can also switch on defense. LaVine and Beal are kind of like that, but they're not quite there for me. And so to that end, you know, there's a lot of guys who could shake loose, and I think that's worth considering. But I'm just not sure that those guys would be really worth the cost of giving up both Rob and Smart, who are pretty critical parts of this team as far as it functions now. Maybe that changes, but unless Towns is shaking loose, I kind of don't see it.
For me, I want to see a table setter, a real floor general, not a score first floor general. Somebody to the tune of a DeJounte Murray. I know he's not available, but I've been lusting after him for quite some time. I think that if you are going to pull a trigger for such core players like that, that you really want to get someone back that really complements the Jays and is young enough and affordable enough. I my eyes lit up when you mentioned Lillard, too. I know Cam wants to say something about that, but he doesn't fit. You know, you might get a title out of it, and that's probably worth doing because who knows what's going to shake loose in the future. I do feel you on that, but ideally you'd want a better fit if you're going to go all in. And I'm fully aware that I'm dancing on the edge of homerdom.
I will just add that the Wolves have been playing way too well, I think, to that they'll ever put Towns on anything remotely resembling the trade block. I also do not want to throw rain on this parade, but if Towns somehow became available in a trade, the Celtics are not getting him for anything less than a package centered around Jaylen Brown. I understand. Right. Yeah, I understand that Beal may seem like something of a consolation prize or maybe not kind of that top tier superstar, but I also think that given the trajectory of kind of superstar trades, like giving up Smart and Williams for him, while admittedly painful, I think there's something to be said about loving the players on your team and just wanting to see them succeed together, not wanting them to make a trade. But if you are desperate for an upgrade, I think that realistically, some kind of Smart Williams picks package for Beal, that's the price it's going to take to get a guy like that. Now, obviously there are going to be differing opinions on what Beal can do and how good of a player he is, et cetera. But in terms of just kind of the market value and how the league works, like, that to me is the most kind of realistic trade framework of any of the names being talked about right now.
Especially if it is true that a player would kind of need to agitate to get to Boston because Beal, his relationship with Tatum kind of changes things. I don't think like, yeah, James Harden didn't sign his extension, but it's not so that he can ship up to Boston. All right, let's talk about option five. And we've covered it enough. We don't need to dwell on this too long, but according to some reporting out there, I'm not going to name names, some folks think that the possibility of Jaylen Brown leaving Boston could happen sooner rather than later. And unlike trading Marcus Smart and Rob Williams for whichever better player, probably trading Jaylen Brown is truly a pivot, not necessarily an opportunity, because I don't know that Cat wants to come to Boston. I don't know that there is that Anthony Davis kind of player that Boston has angled for in the past. So, Rohan, I mean, hopefully you have a better head on your shoulders than we do. What do you think of the Jaylen Brown kind of buzz that has been floating around? And, I mean, I always go to T-Mac and Vince Carter when I think of Jaylen and Jason, and that didn't end in a title. So, kind of where are your thoughts with what could happen with the Jays in Boston in the next, I don't know, 18 months?
It's never made sense to me that Jaylen Brown has popped up any trade rumors. To me, it's always felt like wishful thinking, other teams hoping that they can pry him loose somehow. For me, if I were the Celtics, it would be a non-starter. I think just the nature of the NBA in the 21st century is those are the players every team is desperately looking for. Teams are looking, there's a reason why Mikal Bridges, who I think is an outstanding player, gets paid $90 million. It's because he deserves it. And that skill set is so important. And the drop-off from someone like a Jaylen Brown to your league average 3-and-D player is huge in the playoffs. And to me, if I were Brad Stevens, like a Jaylen Brown trade is a non-starter unless I'm getting a top 11 or 12 player in the NBA and I'm centering a package around that and I feel like this player can take me to the next level. I don't understand why that's a thing that pops up. Again, unless there is something going on behind the scenes that either has not been reported or maybe we're not really privy to, it just doesn't make sense to me that they're both so young. Has Tatum even technically started his extension yet? Is this the first year of it? I mean,
first year of it, I think.
Yes, they're just both so early in their careers that I think that it's way too soon to kind of pull the plug when the best teams you put around them for different reasons, you kind of got snake bitten. I think you owe it to yourselves to kind of give it another proper go with those two guys as your lead players and see what you can add around them before you again, I mean, unless somehow, you know, I could go to our SI top 100 list, but unless somehow Damian Lillard shakes free or I don't know, but that, to me, you're only looking at trading Jaylen Brown as for a limited scope of players.
No, that's why we kind of led with what is leading this buzz more than let's pick it apart, because I don't think that we think in Boston anyways that there's that much merit to it, least of which Tatum was playing with an inhaler last year. Jaylen broke his wrist and then he had COVID. So we just don't have data on really what that pair can be in their mid-20s. We have data on what they can be in their early 20s, but that's a different beast entirely. All right, we have a few more things, but we've also taken a lot of your time, so we'll do them very, very quickly. We have three quick moves for you to analyze that, peeling back all the options from mild to nuclear, we have decided that probably something in the margins is most likely. So we're going to, Rohan, quickly go through and give us your gut reaction. Good trade, bad trade, outrageous trade, best trade, whatever adjective comes to mind. Justin, you're up first.
So for me, what I was trying to do here was a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B in terms of Stan Pep also making moves around the margins. I tried to design something where they can get back a player worth keeping who will help them this season in the postseason, but will also be able to get them under the tax. So that's a tricky thing to do, and I don't think they could do a much more interesting job than I did, but I went for the lowest of low-hanging fruit and flipped Enes Freedom and Juancho Hernan Gomez along with 2 second-round picks for Daniel Tice to Houston because, I mean, he may not know all the players who are on the roster now, he may not know the coach, but he's played with enough of them and works at a position of need and defends a little bit better than Enes, then I think that would actually be a really positive move that would still accomplish the goals of staying out of tax this season.
I like that trade. I was kind of surprised Boston gave up on Tice when they did. I was a little bit surprised by that. That was a kind of a real defeatist move when they shipped him off. So I like that one. I'm with you. I think that in the right playoff series, he can have his moments and be effective. I mean, you could do a lot worse than him as a backup big, as a third kind of big in a rotation with Horford and Williams. So I like that one.
Thanks.
Alex, you're up.
Sure. So I got a little bit more ambitious. I was thinking, you know, I frankly skirted the tax concerns. And I did so because I was kind of reading Twitter today and seeing some trade rumors fly around. And I know that we talked about how trade rumors are not super reliable, but there was one that kind of jumped out to me as pretty intriguing. When I do trade machine stuff, I try my best to think about what the other team needs before I kind of pull the trigger on stuff. So I was thinking about knowing that the Celtics probably can't pay Dennis Schroeder this offseason. And as good as he has been off the bench, there is some logic to the idea of trying to ship him off at the peak of his value. And looking at who needs a backup point guard, like a quality backup point guard, and then looking at some other teams that were floating around, I came up with the following. It's a little ambitious and probably won't happen, but the Celtics get back Trey Burke and Willie Cauley-Stein, along with Buddy Hield, who just popped up in a trade rumor earlier today. They ship out to the Dallas Mavericks, Enes Freedom, Dennis Schroeder, and then the Mavericks also receive from the Sacramento Kings, Marvin Bagley, who has been largely shut out of the Kings rotation. And I do think it would be funny to see Luka and Bagley on the same team, just as an aside, see what's going on there. But then the Kings, for their trouble, receive Juancho Hernangómez. Aaron Nesmith would be the centerpiece of this trade for the Celtics, along with a 2023 protected first round pick. And then Josh Green, who has been kind of buried in the Mavericks rotation, but still offers some potential as a young 6'5 shooting guard who can hit outside shots. It's pretty long, just hasn't really had an opportunity to get playing time there. So the Celtics get some veteran help in the form of Hield and a downgrade at backup point guard, but a significant upgrade in terms of their shooting. The Mavericks get a backup point guard that can take Luka's playmaking duties away for a little bit and give him a breather. And the Kings get a pile of okay flyer young assets, as well as a pick for their troubles.
Yeah, I love the ambition, but I think this is where, again, Nesmith not really having kind of a sustained stretch hurts the Celtics, because I just think the Kings are probably the one team in this construction that is feeling like they can do a little bit better here. They were looking at trading Hield for, Kuzma and I believe Harrell at the start of the season. And your mileage may vary on Kuzma, but I mean, he's proven that he can be a rotation player for a championship team, right? Willing to adjust his role, etc. Harrell's a former Sixth Man of the Year. So I just think that the Kings are probably looking at that trade like, we can do a little bit better. We can get kind of, especially if they're throwing in Bagley too, who I think still has some fans around the league. I feel like they're probably thinking, we could do a little bit better here. We get some more solid rotation pieces back.
I probably agree, but I do love that Alex is thinking about Buddy Hield, because I find myself thinking about Buddy Hield.
Yes, and I love a three-team trade. So there's a lot to like there. But yeah, I just think the Kings are probably the one team in that configuration that are like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
All right, I'm not going to lead the witness on mine. I'm just going to tell you the framework of the trade. You can tell me if it's garbage or not. Schroeder, Pritchard, and Juancho Gomez go to Portland. Larry Nance Jr. and Cody Zeller back to Boston.
Whoa, that's an interesting one. I love Larry Nance Jr. I think it's a little bit of a stretch that Portland gives up on Nance, because they are also not going to be able to sign Schroeder past this season, and they just signed Nance. But that's an interesting one. Schroeder, Pritchard, and Juancho. Yeah, I just don't see it for Portland, but that's interesting. I haven't seen Nance's name kind of floated around anywhere. I think a lot of people expect him, especially if they move on from Nurkic, to have a big role there. But I wonder if some teams would go sniffing around Nance, seeing what the Blazers end up doing. But that's an interesting one. I'm going to be thinking about that one for a little while.
I will say, and we're going to talk about Schroeder now, because this is not Blazers wire, but I do wonder that if CJ McCollum leaves, if there's a lot of action going on with Portland. So that was a little bit of my thinking, but again, there are other podcasts for that conversation. So Justin, talk us through what's going on with Schroeder. He also popped up in the news recently, and maybe his time with Boston is limited.
I mean, it's almost certainly limited, just because he signed on the mini mid-level exception, which is under $6 million. It is conveniently close to where Boston is in terms of the tax. They also have Jabari Parker on the roster, who is only guaranteed, if they waive him before mid-January, they will save $1.1 million on their tax bill. So the combined two, or combining him with Juancho, would get you across the finish line. You can maybe throw Bruno Fernando into a deal, maybe to kind of grease the wheels, or even Enes if somebody convinces themselves that they really do need another big like him. I wouldn't be that team, but that's a different story. And now, with all this said about the tax situation, and standing pat and all the stuff we've been discussing, there's really three ways that we can go. We've kind of touched on these a little bit. We could package it and try to land a high impact player or star. Something that I came up with for that was another star, or not really star, but potential future star, was in the news today, Cam Reddish. If you maybe wanted to go after him and you didn't really care about the tax because you really want to try to find a way to get him in Atlanta, the logic here would want to, you know, not find itself out of the playoffs immediately after taking that step forward. So maybe they might be motivated to take a chance on just, you know, having him come back to Atlanta and just to see what happens. So like Reddish, Ding, and Luau Okagboro for Enes Langford and Schroeder, plus a first round pick and some seconds to kind of grease it. Then there could be, you know, trading for a cheap rotation player, maybe sending Schroeder and Juancho to Dallas for Trey Burke, as you were kind of suggesting, in a bigger framework. Then Dallas sends Moses Brown just to make the salary work to Oklahoma City. Or a third scenario where we're just basically making the space so we save the tax. It's kind of depressing. We're probably going to get back like a fake second or something like that. Schroeder to the Knicks or Phoenix or Memphis or Dallas or Spurs or any of the teams out there that have some space. But I wanted to actually have Rohan talk just a second on what he actually envisioned Schroeder's value being, because it was considerably more optimistic than me, which was kind of that third option. I kind of think that there's a very good chance we could see there, just because when teams see the Celtics and are able to put them over a barrel, they seem to really enjoy doing it. So it wouldn't surprise me if we end up there. But Rohan, what do you think?
Yeah, the Schroeder piece is interesting because I think he has a lot of value to every team that would acquire him. But his contract situation is such an issue, because it's great for this season. It's terrible for the future, right? You don't want to give up anything for him long term, because you can't really keep him unless somehow his market is once again very depressed next summer, which is not impossible considering kind of the lack of cap space around the league. So that's a roundabout way of me saying the Schroeder things are going to be really hard to predict. If I had to guess, I think that he gets traded for a little bit less than he's worth, just because every team is going to hedge against the fact that the better he plays, the worse chance we have of actually signing him beyond this season. So, and especially if it ends up being that the Celtics are looking to get out from under the tax, et cetera, teams are going to recognize that as well. So if I had to guess, I do think he's the kind of, he's one of those deadline vets that gets moved for, it's not quite PJ Tucker last year, but it's closer to that than kind of a big move where the return is a little bit underwhelming just because of the contract situation.
All right. Well, Rohan, we took way too much of your time anyways, and we all need to go get ready to watch Steph Curry break the 3-point record. So Rohan and Ned Carney, you write for Sports Illustrated, and we can't thank you enough for coming on.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I had a great time.
Yeah. Appreciate it very, very much.
Thanks, Rohan.